The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Astamai, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Halfway through this Cannon administration, we're working our way around all the constituencies and talking to the pairs of MHKs that represent them. Claire Christian was first elected in a by-election and swiftly re-elected in the last general election. Sarah Maltby in first time at the last general election. So it's Sarah Maltby and Claire Christian MHKs representing Douglas South. If you live in and around, something you want to talk about, then text, email, call and WhatsApp. And we're on air till just before 1 o'clock today. So it's over to you. And Fastamai, good afternoon, Sarah and Claire. Hello, hello.
Fastamai.
Good to see you. So I remember the last time we were all together in this, we were at the Pinewood, weren't we?
We did a pre-election
get-together. So Sarah Maltby, I mean, I have to say, is it what you thought it would be?
I did know exactly what I was getting myself involved in, yes. It didn't come as a complete surprise. However, there's always complexities and difficult decisions to make, but when you're in the moment, can be very difficult. It's a huge responsibility being an MHK, one that I do not take for granted any single day. I love the job. I love the people that I represent, and I hope to continue to do so the best I can.
Okay, Claire Christian.
Obviously it's you have a very, very fast learning curve. Yeah. As any new MHK. I always kind of say every year that goes by, I wish I knew what I knew last year or etc. But equally as what Sarah said, it really is a real honour to represent the constituents of Douglas South. And if there is a constituent who's listening today and doesn't get to ask a question or anything, I'm sure both Sarah and I would be happy to answer any questions.
It's a very compact constituency, isn't it? I mean, everyone's packed into a relatively small area.
Douglas South is the size of Ramsey, in terms of the number of constituents. So, it's a very, very compact constituency.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines first of all. I think Stephen. Hi, Stephen. You're live with Claire Christian and Sarah Maltby.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon, listeners. I wondered if I could talk to about some of the problems that smaller businesses appear to be having on the island. And I do think the island in general, when you go around some of the smaller towns, there are similar problems to probably what the Victoria Cafe is having. And I would say some of them are caused by the cost of energy, footfall, staffing, and the cost of raw materials. Now, what I noticed is we've had an announcement from DOI, Department of Enterprise, that they want to grow the visitor numbers. But so far, there doesn't seem to be any information of how that will be achieved. Energy is a very big cost, and we've looked at work permit legislation has been relaxed, so that would not appear to be a problem. From what I've read, the whole of the UK is having recruitment problems. So what I'd like to ask your two guests today is, in order to help these the smaller hospitality shops, cafes, and even the hotels would be helped, would be by growing the visitor numbers, which would in turn grow the footfall and the hotels would solve some of the problems, because you could spread the cost over these costs over the whole number. But in order to grow the footfall, surely we would need more routes and some special offers by the steam packet. Now, I believe the steam packet wants to sell the Ben McCree, the passenger ship, citing a number of reasons. But in the past, as you both will be aware, the steam packet did have passenger ships laid up in the long winter periods and then running them in the summer period. Now, what I'd like to ask you is, would you support the expansion, I suppose, of the steam packet fleet to achieve this end, because I can't see any other way of getting it expanded, because really the Manxman is just on a tramway route back and forward to Heysham. So if we are to grow with the visitor economy and have more people travelling here, I would have thought we would need more outport routes provided once again.
Okay, Claire Christian.
Thank you. Stephen, it's a really, really great question. How do we grow the visitor economy? Actually, the Sea Services Agreement was actually debated in November. I believe Chris Thomas and I were the ones that kind of spoke up in this debate. One of the points that I raised during that was the consideration of the RET, which is the road equivalent tariff. So, for example, in Clyde and Hebrides services, they have seen positive impact. That for lower fares for road equivalent tariff, and they have seen about an 11% increase in the passenger numbers, which has obviously benefited tourism and islander economics. And improved access for the islanders too. So I agree with you that we want to be looking at extra routes, but also I'm really interested in seeing the Sea Services Agreement with consideration for road equivalent tariffs for passengers.
Okay, Sarah Morby.
So I recently joined the DfE, and so I've been given visit agency as one of my delegations, and I'm really pleased with the team that I've met already. They are so keen and so eager to ensure that the island is sold around the world as being a top destination. I'm really confident in their ability, and I'm sure that we will be able to hit the target of 330,000 visitors this year. So the visitors are coming. We had 300,000 last year, and that is they are targeted to beat that that number. Yeah. There are packages available from the Allemans team packet. Granted, Stephen, you are right, we probably could do more. That's something that I hope to be able to look into with the team packet, because they do sit on the visit agency board as well. When you talked about business support, the business agency, I know, have an outreach team that do go out to businesses who raise a flag and say that we're struggling. We have meetings, DfE meetings, and at those meetings, all the agencies are represented there, and they do feedback the comments and concerns from businesses directly to the minister and the departmental members. So we do hear those concerns, and we are trying to find a way to be able to support that agency to be able to support those businesses.
Okay, Stephen.
Well, I'd just like to have a short reply, if I may. Is would you both support lobbying, speaking, and I know the steam packet don't like this, but I do feel on the big issues it is important that the elected representatives try and convey the message. And that is, would you both support the Ben McCree being utilised instead of the Arrow because of the ability? And there will be a cost, but as you probably both will remember, when the user agreement was first thought of, it was done in order to let the company offset their costs, sometimes unprofitable passenger routes, for having the lion's share of the freight coming to the island. So I'd just like to hear both your views of, do you support the Ben McCree being retained instead of the Arrow, and using it to try and grow the visitor economy? Because it would be probably be unfair to give people support with their energy costs and not others, but that is one of the big things I hear, certainly it's people I speak to, that the energy costs are exorbitant and the footfall doesn't match the costs. So.
Okay, all right.
Stephen, you asked for a short answer. The answer is yes.
Yeah. Okay, and Sarah Mulby.
First of all, I would like to be able to see grow the visitor attractions throughout the whole year rather than just seasonal periods first. That would be my first avenue rather than jumping straight into the option of the Ben McCree.
Okay. Final words, Stephen.
Well, Claire, I'm very pleased with your answer. Sarah, sadly, I'm not so pleased. I would have thought you would have wanted I don't see how you can grow the economy unless you do have another ship. So I do hope you will reconsider your answer.
OK, thanks thanks for that, Stephen. Claire?
Just on the last part, obviously, being a previous small business owner, I'm really in tune with the higher input costs that small businesses are experiencing and continue to experience. And one of the things that I lobbied for in Tynwald during the tax strategy speech debate was rates relief or a reduction for smaller businesses over a guaranteed period of time so that businesses can plan and have room to grow. They do this in the UK in lots of local districts, and I believe it is, over a 10-year plan, I believe that's something that we should be looking at as a solution, something really tangible for small businesses to help right now under the current climate.
Okay, and Claire Christian, let's just put this in context. And of course, you're a former retailer yourself. Retail is struggling. Now, some of the big ones are doing okay. Obviously, people like Tesco, Marks and Spencer and what have you. But a lot of retail are a couple of bad months away from going out of business. I've chatted to many people in the business, and they seem to think that government doesn't quite hear this. So what's the answer? I mean, is it up to government to reach out to business, or does business have to make more noise?
So, I mean, Sarah's obviously within the Department for Enterprise, so she could probably update a little bit more on this. But what I would say is the DfE have gone out to local areas, and I am reassured by them that they are listening. But it takes more than listening. We actually need a plan, a strategic plan for retail businesses. How do we want our high streets what do we want them to look like? Are we going to concentrate one area of the Douglas City, which is going to be for independents, give them rate relief, get people to those areas where they're going to shop for local independents, and leave the high street to the high street retailers?
You can have all the meetings in the world, but
absolutely,
something has to happen,
and that's what I would like to see the DfE taking that information that they've done on their road show as they've gone around the island, taking that information, and what fits for Ramsey might not fit for Douglas, and that's another thing we've got to really look at, what's important for each of the individual towns, because we don't want to just concentrate everything in Douglas. We do want to consider Port St Mary, Port Erin, etc., Castletown.
Sarah Maltby.
Yes, so part of the visit agency have just announced that we have a destination board that has just been established, which will be doing that exact thing, working with local authorities, working with businesses within their areas, and feeding that all into the DfE to be able to produce and to support the businesses and what the people of that area want. You can ask as many questions as you want, but you really need to make sure that the consumer is also getting what they want from their town.
Okay, Paul's with us now. Hi Paul, you're live with Douglas South MHKs.
Hi, good afternoon. Hello, Claire and Sarah. It's just been on the news before about the changing rooms at Spring Valley. My team, Paul Rose Football Club, obviously changed up there with another team, Governors Athletic. 2 years ago, the building was condemned and demolished. And since that time, the clubs have been getting changed in porter cabins. Within that space of time, I've actually been dealing with this now for 7 years, when the old changing room started to deteriorate, with the council trying to reach a conclusion, which is obviously we needed them to be rebuilt. We're no further on. I was disappointed at the meeting yesterday. We're going away again and looking at options. The Football Foundation, through the Manx Football Association, have put a sizable sum of money towards the rebuild. In fact, that reflects 60% of the available budget. My own club is putting money into it. And we feel, sadly, let down. Now, Claire and Sarah, because we've reached this point, we reached out to them to say, can you help? And I would like to thank the ladies for getting involved, for showing their concern over what's happening up there in that area, in the Paul Rose area. It's a fabulous facility with absolutely dreadful changing rooms and so on now. So thank you, ladies. And if you'd like to add anything to what I've just said, I'd be grateful.
Okay, just before we go to the MHKs, Paul, how long have the players been changing in porter cabins again?
This is our second season. And it's no coincidence that the first 2 years ago, when we were given the porter cabins, that we lost the team because we had no facilities. The players were fed up. We're hanging in there by a thread now. And in fact, if I could take the chance to just thank the players that have stayed with the club. We're fighting this thing to try and get you decent facilities, but thank you for staying with us. For those of you that left us, I understand why you did it. And I hope when we get back on a better footing that you'll come back and join us.
Okay, Sarah Mulby.
Yeah, thank you. And hello, Paul. First of all, thank you, you and Mo Posland and the rest of the committee that have worked tirelessly to try and ensure that this facility is rebuilt. You guys have invested so much time into this place, and it's more than just a playing field. This is a community that come together, invite other community groups to the playing fields as well. And it's really, really such a shame that we are having to feel like we're fighting to be able to get back what the club had, but obviously a much fitter and much more accessible place for more community groups to be able to use. So it's a real shame that we feel like we are fighting for this. But obviously myself and Mrs. Christian are there with you, and we will be with you until we can get this resolved. Yesterday, we attended the council meeting with you, and we obviously heard from Councillor Bentley, Councillor Wells, and their feelings on this topic, which seemed to contradict or differ to one another. And so we want to see where we can find a way to get people together in one room and to be able to find out what we can actually do about this, because it has gone on for far too long. You've been very patient, and we're obviously here now to try and support you.
Okay. Claire Grisham, what's gone wrong?
So, firstly, thank you, Paul, for calling in. And really, if I can take this opportunity right now to appeal to Douglas City Council and to say to them, really please, now, can this be put forward as top priority? We appreciate there is red tape to go through. We appreciate there is procedures to follow. But this really needs now first priority, because this the porter cabins were meant to be a temporary solution, a maximum 3 years, as I understand it. And, you know, the fields themselves, the football fields themselves are essential for this community, for Douglas South. They are smack bang in the middle of three housing estates. And on Tuesday night, when I went down to watch the football match, I saw people, you know, parents coming out with the kids, etc., really enjoying it. It was a very social activity. Some of these players, you know, they look up to the older members like Paul, our caller here. You know, it's really important they learn about teams building skills, all things that the government, our government, say are in the island plan. So it's essential that we maintain this. Any suggestion that these football teams should be using Nobles half a mile away is not right. We need to keep this. We need to maintain it. And both Mrs. Maltby and I, we will absolutely do everything. They have our full support. We have also... We're hoping to schedule a meeting with all the Mrs. Motby and I have requested a meeting. It's to be agreed, so we can get all the parties around the table and actually put together a time and action plan. You know, because so that we can get this firmly done and agreed, so that I would hope for next season they would have the proper facilities. And one thing that I just want to say, this isn't just used by you know, young men. This is used by the Special Olympics, you know, the teams, this, you know, and they have really essential needs where they have emergency medication that needs to be housed in suitable facilities. And at the moment, the porter cabins just aren't facilitating that. So this is really important that and as Paul's mentioned, they've lost one team. We absolutely need to get this so that they can start attracting the young people of Douglas South into football, whether you're a man, woman, whether you're a young child, you know, we need to get that community spirit back again.
The council met in February, and they the tenders, they said, were too high, so it's too much money. Either they haven't got the money or they don't want to spend it. And they're talking about modular buildings now.
Yeah, I've looked into the modular buildings, and there are suppliers in the UK who it's normal for them to do modular buildings, which last 25 years for these changing room facilities, and they're actually very good. It's a lot of the really good football clubs have them in the UK.
So they're not just glorified porter cabins.
So they're not glorified porter cabins. No, they're not. But obviously, there'll be standards that that need to be met for the Football Foundation to still, as Paul said, to still give the 60%. So that's what we've really got to make sure, because they're holding us, or they're holding to make sure that we maintain really good changing room facilities.
Sarah Maltby?
Yeah, I was just going to add on to that. The sports fields cannot be used for anything else but sports.
Yep.
So it's essential.
There's no chance of them ever being built up.
No, they can't be. The underground, it's not appropriate, or it just can't be built on. No, so they are sports fields or playing fields. And so it's so important that that's maintained, because if it isn't, if we don't get that changing rooms back where it should be, all hooked up and ready to go, ready to welcome all the Special Olympics, the women, the children and all the adults that Mrs. Christian's already referred to, if we don't have it, then that field will just turn into some sort of dump. It'll just turn into places where things are just left. And, you know, people have great pride in this this community asset. And another thing I'd like to add is that it's not just the council who will be funding the changing rooms. There is funding coming from the Football Association.
How much are we talking about?
From the Football Association, I think it was £250. The club themselves have obviously fundraised as well to put towards this, and then the council, I think, contributed about £175,000. These are big numbers, and I do accept they are big numbers, and it is for,
but they're proper facilities for proper facilities, football teams. Yeah.
Absolutely, that not only were promised the, you know, this has been like Paul says, this has been something that has been going on now for quite a long time, for over 7 years, and it feels like the target, rather than getting closer, it's just getting pushed further away. And I think at this point, that's why they've asked myself and Mrs. Christian if we can get involved to help, because it really is quite a concern.
Okay, Paul, what do you think of what you heard?
I think the ladies summed it up very nicely and added to. I really didn't want to come on the line and criticise the council. I understand their constraints, but it's just gone on too long now. You know, we sit down for a committee meeting, we don't feel that we've made any. I'll give a progress report, and it's all been, it takes too long. I was getting to the point where I didn't think there was the will within the council to make this happen. I've been told I'm wrong in that, but the timeline itself speaks for itself, really. As I say, I'd like to thank the ladies for highlighting a lot of the things I would have liked to have said, but there's just so, we've gone over such a long period of time. I mean, we spent money, our own club's money, shoring up the old building with the help, I must say, thanks to Tony Meppen with that, but volunteers, we spent 3 weeks in the summer to try and get another year or two's life out of the old building. That's how far we've gone with this thing, and there's lots more I could say, but I think it took up enough time.
Okay.
Thank the ladies again.
No, Paul, we really appreciate it. I think everybody understands that they're not just football pitches and they're not just changing rooms. These are part of history, culture and everything that goes to support that. So we wish you well, and Paul, keep us informed. We'll watch the situation very carefully. Howard, hi Howard, you're live with Douglas South MHKs.
Hello, Andy. Good afternoon, Claire. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Good afternoon, Howard.
Just what is your point of view with the in relation to the question that Stephen asked earlier on about the steam packet, etc., wanting to dispose of the Ben? He said that they used to put ships, they did, they put them in barrel and places like that for the winter. But they had 11 vessels then. But at that time, they were carrying the freight lift on, lift off. They had the freight berth just down below the lifting bridge, as we call it now. So to get rid of the Ben, it seems, I don't know, there seems to be the government working one way and the steam packet pulling the other way. Neither one of them seems to want to work together. The Ben, there was quite a few of those vessels built, and the Condor Line down in the south of England, where they're travelling through to Jersey, Guernsey, etc., they have just bought a sister ship to the Ben and brought it within their own fleet. And here we are trying to get rid of the vessel that can be useful if and when the Manxman goes in for servicing, because of, they're talking about getting rid of the fast craft eventually, changing that. But that is very restricted in the weather it can sail in. The steam packets seem to be primarily interested only in freight. And the passenger service seems to be secondary. But this, again, I think, is simply because the steam packet are running it and the government own it, or the people own it. And there seems to be a conflict of opinion. What is your view on the steam packet disposing of the Ben and keeping the Arrow?
Okay, Claire Christian.
Thank you. So in answer to the question that you've asked, I absolutely do think, certainly in the foreseeable future, we do need to keep the Ben. I think what's really important, you touched a little bit about what government wants and what the Isle of Man steam packet wants, and it's two different things. And this is why it's essential that the Sea Service Agreement is really put on a top priority for the DOI to resolve, so that we can, or the government can, and certainly as backbenchers, Mrs. Maltby and I, we can lobby for things like this to be in the Sea Services Agreements to assure that we have that security and that it isn't just a freight interest, and we do look at the passengers as well. Just reaching just a little bit further about how the Sea Services Agreement at the moment is lacking any kind of support for lower freight costs for Manx registered businesses. So I'd really like to see that to help support, and that could help drive the business and the need for the Ben McCrae.
Okay, Sarah Maltby.
Yeah, I think my point was maybe not explained very well early when Stephen asked his question. Of course, the Ben McCrae is very important, but when you conflate it with visitors, I think visitors need to be coming here all the way through the year and not just at sort of peak times. And so that's what I was trying to say, was I would like to ensure that we can grow the visitor economy throughout the year and not just at peak season times. The Ben McCrae is an important asset. It does seem to be up in the air at the moment. We don't seem to have a real idea of what the steam packet is going to do with it. This is one of the issues with the steam packet not being able to be FOIable, I suppose. You don't get to hear get those questions that you would like to be answered.
I mean, what's your opinion of that? Because the public don't quite understand why the steam packet, our company, Treasury shareholders, is not FOIable.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that, to be honest. That is something that I think would certainly help. I do think it's quite difficult each week when we have lots of questions coming through from backbenchers to the Treasury Minister or to the DfE Minister asking questions about the steam packet, and clearly they're just reading answers out that they've been given. Yeah. You know, it would make far more sense to me if you could actually ask the company itself.
Yeah. It just prompts the suspicion that they're hiding something, which I'm sure they're not, but it prompts the image that we're not worthy. We're not worth the information.
I don't think that's what... I think the steam packet does... I think the steam packet does what they've been requested to do. You know, that the legislation and the agreements are in place are as they are. It's just one of those things that will obviously need to be addressed, and it's been addressed. It has been spoken about already recently, and it's something that is on people's minds.
Okay, fine. Claire Christian.
Yeah, can I just add to that? I think when we're looking at arm's length organisations and the misconception that has been built up, certainly in the last administration, I mean, I heard debates, I wasn't an MHK at the time, but I heard debates by ministers saying, you know, the steam packets ours, and this is, you know, this is a really good move for us. We'll be able to control it. It doesn't feel like that right now in this administration. It feels very much like the arm's length. It's now a political, it's not our problem. So what I would like to see is basically a tightening up of what we expect these arm's length organisations to be providing for us as the Manx public and to the government. And I'd really like to get, I hope that these sort of things will be addressed by this government, and I would encourage them, because this is building up a great frustration in the public.
Okay. Final word, Howard?
Yes, I agree with what Claire was just saying there, that the arm's length, it seems to become a much further distance away from each other. The steam packet now are doing the running, and the government are trying rapidly to catch up, but they won't. They won't catch up, and this, as they say, there should be some, the rope that in between them, the arm's length, should be tightened very, very considerably. And that way, the people who own the steam packet, and as far as I am aware, I think they own the vessels. So how can a company sell a vessel that belongs to the people?
Okay. All right. Thanks, Howard. We appreciate that. And we're back with Douglas South MHK, Sarah Maltby and Claire Christian in a moment.
From our castles to our cottages, our museums, and the great Laxey Wheel. You'll find hidden treasures around every corner when you visit a Manx National Heritage site. Fill your summer making treasured memories with Manx National Heritage. Sites now open every day. By visiting, you help protect our treasured island for generations to come. Plan your visit today at manxnationalheritage.im.
Hey, June. I wanted to tell you about the Green Living Grant. Well, new Spectrum windows and doors are so energy efficient, they qualify for the Green Living Grant, with funding available for up to 50% of the cost. I saved £5,725, but the application deadline closes at the end of June.
Don't delay. Contact Spectrum Windows today on 817777. T's and C's apply.
Just Care Products for mobility solutions.
At Just Care Products, we have a range of rise, recline and fireside chairs to try. These are British made and perfect for people with mobility issues. With finance available through our partner, Conister, come take a seat at Just Care Products. Find us behind B&Q, or for more information, give us a call on
627 177.
Step into Office World, the island's largest fully stocked stationery store, where there's over 5,000 items on display to take away. From pens, paper, inks and toners to general stationery, adhesives and batteries, you can get what you need right now from Office World. With all the big brands, including Pilot, Pentel, Sellotape, Duracell, Gorilla, Pucker Pads and more. Office World is conveniently located on Spring Valley Industrial Estate, with easy parking right outside the door.
Office World! Manx Care's ambition is to become the best small island health and social care system in the world, and Manx Care's chief executive certainly has the passion and commitment to try to deliver that very worthy aspiration. So why have we not seen that ambition being delivered so far? What obstacles lie in the way of Manx Care delivering health and social services to help us all live long and healthy lives? Find out when Teresa Cope joins me, Phil Gorn, on Perspective this Sunday at 12 noon on Manx Radio. If strategies and plans cured illnesses, we'd all be a lot healthier. So when will we start to see the real change and improvement that significant budget increases appear to promise?
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
With Claire Christian, MHK, and Sarah Maltby, colleagues in Douglas South. We've been to the phones, lots of messages to get through, including this regarding, and this has been mentioned many times, and it is the problem of drugs in Paul Rose and used needles being found, drugs being peddled around Paul Rose, and the progress that's going to be, that is being made basically to get, and it's a tiny proportion of people, but there is a problem with the pushing of drugs and the use of drugs around Paul Rose, Sarah Maltby.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you just said it's a tiny proportion of people, Andy, because it really is just a tiny proportion of people.
Yeah.
I get quite defensive over Paul Rose. My mum was brought up and raised in Paul Rose. I was brought up and dragged up by my nana in Paul Rose, so Paul Rose does hold a special place to me. It's a great community. We've just been talking about the fantastic asset that the community should have. There are problem areas, but like they are problem areas across the island. Paul Rose does seem to get a bit of a battering when it comes to this kind of thing, and rightly so. If there's a concern, please report it to the police. I often get complaints sent to me from constituents, and I try my hardest to be able to help and to be able to support that person, but when it comes to making a complaint to the police, people are reluctant to do so. There is an anonymous line that people can call, and if they would like to email me, then I can obviously pass that on for them to be able to support them with that complaint.
Well, some people are frightened of being intimidated.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why, you know, I'm happy to support people if they don't feel like they want to make that complaint. I have a good relationship with the Douglas South community police officer, Kelly Walker. She's yeah. really good. She emails, I email her back. The needles issue that you just raised there, that's one that I sent to her, and she is going to go into the schools yeah. after Easter half term to do a little piece of work with the head teachers and the teachers within the school. So you know, that is proactive. People are listening and trying to put the pieces into place to be able to support young people.
Do you think it would have been better if the police station had stayed there?
I think the police station leaving was unfortunate. I think we also used to have more community councillors and warden of the area, and that obviously is missing, and that's lacking, and that's why people like Paul, who was on before, have done such a great job being able to do that unofficially. But it really should be something that we are leading on. It really is something that I would encourage to bring back if that was all if at all possible.
Claire Christian.
So the constituent contacted me also regarding the incident where a child was found needles in Paul Rose Park, and she inquired basically if there was any provision at the schools for educating children or taking precautions. But obviously, because we're in the Easter period, I have written to Mr. Cool, but he is a very, very proactive head teacher, and I'm sure that there is already some education on this, but once he sees that, he will address it and give us some reassurances. I think Sarah, she's just raised a really, really good point there about community wardens and you know, really sort of giving these kind of leadership people yeah. within the community, and how important that is. And I hate to drive on about the Paul Rose and the football and that community, but that's actually quite a linchpin in yeah. all of this, because it's, you know, they support each other, and young people look up to those people. They really do. Young people look up to the young men in the football teams as well. And this, you know, this is what we really need to push on.
Okay.
But I just one more thing is in just to say that the police obviously did to reassure the public and reassure Douglas South, if they didn't see, the police did do an operation earlier, I think it was in February, where they I'm not saying all of the 21 people that were arrested, but it was a large operation, drugs operation, and I think that was I think 19 of them were convicted. So
okay. Another one from it was from Peter on a kind of a similar subject, not as bad as drugs, but it is lousy parking and unsocial parking in Paul Rose, and people parking big vehicles where they shouldn't be. Claire Christian, what do you do about that? You must get complaints about that.
So we do get complaints, and we do speak to Douglas City Council about this, and they do assessments constantly and they'll obviously flyer those vehicles and to say, please, can you park elsewhere? One thing I would say is if they are parked on pavements, I hear about those kind of situations, please report that to the police. That is illegal. You know, it's a public path, public footway. The police won't take just a photograph, so you do need to report it and say, this is the you know, the license plate number that's there. It's parked on a pavement. I think I have driven through Paul Rose on my way home several times to kind of see the level of parking, to see if it's bad, and I've, you know, I think the the solution, which has obviously been mooted by Douglas City Council, but they're reluctant to do so, is to give actually parking permits to those that live in the area.
I have to say, it's not just Paul Rose, also Annika and Belafton have exactly
absolutely.
The same. Sarah Maltby?
Yeah, absolutely. The parking is an issue, and one of the ways to tackle parking is enforcement, and obviously the traffic wardens finish at 6 o'clock in the evening, and this issue spikes obviously when everyone gets home from work. A lot of the problems in Paul Rose are made more complex in that people use their vans for their day-to-day car their vehicles as well. Yeah. So these aren't just their work vans, they are their livelihood as well, their livelihood as well as their personal vehicle. So it is a bit of a difficult one when you're trying to ask people to park their vehicle, which could have all their tools in it and all of their equipment, which has probably cost a lot of money. I can understand why they don't want to park it too far away from their home. However, I would really urge and ask that people try to park as conscientiously as possible, because really this is about looking after your neighbours, that community spirit again. You know, please try. We have a constituent with a disabled child, and she finds it very difficult to be able to get parked near her home, and people must know she has a disabled child. So, you know, just be conscious of that. And
you probably get the same emails and letters I get from people saying, you know, there's somebody who's parking across our drive, somebody who's... So, I mean, why don't Douglas Council just employ, give the parking warden some overtime so they can work till 9 o'clock at night and issue a few tickets, because if people had to pay parking fines, they wouldn't do it.
It'd be nice if we could just get to a place where we didn't have to do that, though, wouldn't it?
You know, it would be, but then again, you know, it'd be nice if whoever designed the estate would have put a few parking lots for vans.
And we do have, like I said, we have had assessments done, we've had the police involved, we've had the Douglas City Council involved, we've been out looking around the area, we have got tools in our armoury, which we have tried to do, and they have issued letters, but people they comply, they do the right thing for a short amount of time, but then those old habits just fall back into place. But I think if they could actually see and hear from their neighbour how much this is causing them an issue, perhaps that might change the behaviour. But you know, an MHK knocking on the door and asking them to please move their car is probably not going to go down as well as if they maybe spoke to one another a little bit more.
Okay, Anne-Marie, you're live with Claire and Sarah.
Good morning. This is actually a question for Sarah Maltby regarding a private members bill she's been assisting us at Saddle Mews to get through Tynwald.
Okay, Sarah? Go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Marie.
Oh, right. Okay, that's fine. Sorry, I wasn't sure if you could hear me. And it's a question for Sarah regarding the private members bill she was putting through for the residents at Saddle Mews. And it's supposed to be, Sarah was doing this on her own as a private members bill. And then it was suggested that the DOI adopt it, which might make it easier to get through. And there was a recent meeting that I was advised about, but I haven't had a chance to catch up, and I just thought this was an opportunity to ask how far or what the next stage is on this bill, please.
Okay. Sarah?
Thank you, Andy. Hello, Anne-Marie. Yes, it's good to hear from you again. I'm sorry I haven't been back to you. So, yeah, May 2022, I had leave to introduce from the House of Keys to introduce a private members bill. This was the Right to Enfranchisement Bill. This was the second part of Laurie Hooper's bill, which he'd developed with the Right to Manage. So this is the second part of that. And so May 2022, I went to a drafter. We had a year of drafting this bill. And at the end of it, the DOI very kindly decided to adopt this bill, because it's a huge piece of legislation, far bigger than I thought it was going to be. And so the update is that I met with the DOI housing office a few weeks back now, and Dawn Kinnish MLC is going to be taking the lead on this piece of legislation. I am assured that she is keen to get this into the legislative programme. The programme already exists, and this piece of legislation has been slotted into it. I'm really keen to make sure it stays there. So I will be following up on this, and I will be reporting back to yourself when I have an update on what the timeline is looking like. But I am assured that it is within the legislative calendar, and you know, we should hopefully have that piece of legislation forward that will be enacted for the residents of not just Saddle Mews, but of other people around the Isle of Man who face this problem.
Okay, thanks, Anne-Marie.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for that. Just a quick word about seeing your MHK this weekend. There are two political surgeries, Arbury Castle Town and Maloo. Jason Morehouse and Tim Glover will be at Colby Methodist Church Hall on Saturday morning from 10 till 11.30. It's a drop-in format. And Saturday from 10 to 11.30 in Onchan, Rob Callister will be there at the Hub in Onchan Youth and Community Centre, School Road in Onchan from 10 to 11.30. Again, a drop-in format. So if you're in Arbury Castle Town and Maloo or Onchan, then by all means. And here's a question, and this is from Nigel, and it's regarding the provision of bus services around Farm Hill and Annika and Paul Rose as well, Claire Christian. He wants more buses.
So I've actually, you know, I have bus. The bus service is one of the top priorities for definitely for Douglas South, and it's a, you know, it's an ongoing issue. What I would say is, and I hope I can take this opportunity to say that the DOI are going to be doing a consultation, and I will be specifically asking the DOI to make sure that it's constituency led, so that we can home in and see what our constituency need. And I will absolutely be going around with that consultation to say, please fill this out, because this is our chance now as a collective constituency to say what we need. How many buses we need, what types of buses we need, what's the service we need. And one of the main services that I constantly hear, I'm sure Sarah does as well, is about, we used to have a service that took our constituents straight to the hospital, and we're really lacking on that. And then they're not looking at our demographic that we have in Douglas South, which is really, really important that we look at that. We absolutely, Sarah and I know what our constituents need and what they want. We've been saying this from the day one since we got into this administration. We need more bus services. On the other side of that, I would say the budget. You know, the budget didn't provide much hope for me. I'm really honest. It's one of the reasons why I didn't agree with it, because there was not much extra financing for, or certainly no indication that there was going to be anything extra in terms of the budget for buses. And that really, really concerns me, especially when we've got a demand and a need, especially in Douglas South.
Okay, Sarah Maltby.
I was just going to say the budget for the buses has been in place and has been increased. But I would just say to the caller that the Farm Hill, Paul Rose, Annika bus service, although it could do with improvement, I can tell you that the residents of Saddlestone will tell you that they need to be prioritised, because the bus service around Saddlestone is really poor. There's not many stops, and there's, you know, we have lots of, like Mrs. Christian's just said there, the age demographic, it really is tricky to be able to get a bus around Saddlestone area. So,
but going back to the point of Douglas South being really compact, mm-hmm. we've got the buses anyway. It's a relatively small area. Surely it's not difficult to get some more buses around.
Well, I've never been in charge of bus timetables. Mrs. Christian, when she served on the DOI, had responsibility for the buses, probably knows more about how complex the timetabling probably is for buses. But yeah, no, that's not something that I haven't had the pleasure of having to deal with.
When what happened was, and this is pre our time as MHKs, but the buses used to have direct routes, so they were coming from Douglas, come through Douglas South, off to the hospital, they were and back again, and you knew where those routes when they were going to happen, you know, and the consistency of it. Whereas at the moment, you've got those routes, but that particular buses can go off and do another route later on in the afternoon somewhere else around the island. And I think that's one of the fundamental things that I hope the DOI will look at, because having those dedicated routes specifically for, you know, so the bus also helps with the bus drivers as well. Having those dedicated routes would be something I'd like to see us returning to. Okay. Now, there might be arguments against that because of, you know, costs and things, but I genuinely think we need to start looking at customer service. You know, that reliability and efficiency and is absolutely key.
How long would it take for somebody to allocate or just change the bus timetable so that there were buses from South Douglas to Nobles Hospital, direct buses.
So how long would it take?
Yeah.
It has to be, the DOI would have to put into the RTLC. It would have to be approved through the RTLC. I think it's something like 2 or 3 months by that time. They have to wait for objections. But yeah, that's absolutely something we'd like to see.
Okay, just very quickly, and I've got a couple of messages about this. How was your trip to Malta, Sarah Maltby?
It was very good, thank you.
What was it all about?
It was for the Commonwealth Parliamentary Committee Association, and it was representing for Women's International Day.
And on my
return, I've attended two meetings with schools and lots of different children and passed on my learning. And I'm very happy to do that. If anybody else would like to get in touch with me, I put a post on Facebook offering the opportunity to share my learning. And I'm always very happy to meet with people and to tell them all about what I'm up to.
What's your email address?
sarah.maltby@gov.im.
And Claire Christian, your email address?
claire.christian@gov.im.
Okay. Claire Christian is the only healthy one in the studio, I might today, so
not after today.
And, but thanks very much. Good to talk to you, and thanks for Sarah Maltby and Claire Christian. So we've just got one constituency to get to, and that is Glenn Faber and Peel for Kate Lord Brennan and Tim Crookall. Back with another open line tomorrow. If you've been watching on YouTube or Facebook, thanks for your attendance. Thanks to Chris Quirk on the phones today as well. WINT.